Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this hour, they're going to be the views of Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, who's the only person I know who's been involved in things longer than I have and researching what's happening financially. And we're going to talk about finances, and some of you may get tired hearing me talk about it, but I think we're going to have to try to guide at least some of our listeners to what lies ahead, because we're entering one of the most confusing, dangerous, exciting, frightening, terrifying times of our lives, because the entire foundation of the monetary system of our country is beginning to crumble. And of course, if you begin looking and seeing what's happening, of course, the government insists that we have low inflation. And then I just read an article this evening where they admitted that the inflation last year was 4.1%. Of course, it's really about 10%, 10 or 11%, according to Bob Chapman, and I think that's much more realistic. But understanding that what that means is that you're losing 10% of the value of your savings, anything tied to the dollar, on a yearly basis. And, of course, we'll talk to Bob what he thinks is going to happen in the future, but inflation is not just in the United States, it's all around the world. And it's not simply we have these collateralized debt obligations that are really not valid, that we have all these bonds that are not worth what they actually were sold for, and they're not performing the way that they should. And as a result, why many of the pension funds and others are going to have to sell them, and sell them at a loss, because who'd want to buy a collateralized debt obligation when you don't know what it's really worth? And how do you actually rate something that's as complicated as these things? And so with that as a background, Bob Chapman, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, thank you for having me again.
All right, fine. Bob was with us on one of our earlier programs today, and we talked about some of these things. But here we did noticing that for the month of December, why we supposedly lost 17,000 jobs in America. Why, we're not used to losing jobs. We're used to putting on more people to work and more jobs all the time. And certainly as people begin to lose jobs, they can't afford to make their payments on their houses, on their debit cards, on their credit cards, on their automobile loans. And that just sort of compounds the problem, doesn't it, Bob?
Well, it certainly does. You can't pay down your debt if you don't have a job. Unfortunately, we've been losing jobs for some time, irrespective of recession. Over the past 7 years, we've lost over 6 million jobs. And, of course, the government won't admit to that, but that's what the numbers are. And that was caused alone from offshoring and outsourcing via free trade and globalization. And as far as I can see, that's going to continue. And the jobs that are being lost now and from here on out will probably be jobs that were even better than the $30 per hour jobs which were lost in and about the automobile and truck manufacturing business. I see that Ford and Chrysler both just made another offer, along with General Motors, to clear out 100,000 here and 20,000 there.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. Bob simply pointing out that the Ford Motor Ford and General Motors and Chrysler are just trying to get rid of all their high-cost employees, and they're paying them $100,000, $120,000, $140,000 just to agree to quit their jobs. And, gee, isn't that wonderful to get all that money free? But, of course, they were making fantastic salaries, some of them, of course, $30 an hour. As far as their salary is concerned, but maybe $25 or $30 an hour as far as their benefits are concerned. And of course, the new jobs they're going to get are going to be low-paying jobs, and the new people coming to work for the automotive factories and automotive producers are going to be low-paying jobs without all the benefits that they've had before. And people are desperate for jobs, they'll take them. So go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, part of those, about 20% of those jobs, will go to people who are making about $14 an hour. These are new people with no benefits. And the remainder of them are going to either India or China, other places. And, you know, what is already a destitute area, you're going to have it even worse in places like Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Chicago, Kansas City, upstate New York, Quebec, and Ontario as well. And they've already been in a recession for several years. And I don't know what's going to become of the area. I mean, if there's so few jobs around and so little money available, I would think that people are probably going to have to migrate to other places.
Well, you know, I've heard that, you know, back in Detroit, why sometimes a lot of these houses, you know, a few years ago worth several hundred thousand, you know, are being sold at auction for, you know, $25,000, $35,000, and they're having a hard time getting anybody to buy those houses.
Yeah, you're right, and that's a real sad commentary, but the solution is very simple. All I have to do is reenact tariffs on goods and services. And that'll solve the problem.
But, of course, they don't intend to do that because their real objective is equitable distribution or redistribution of the wealth within nations and between nations, and they don't want to protect our jobs and certainly the living standards of the American people. I think that's so hard for people to understand, but that's the truth about it, what it's all about, and none of the presidential candidates will address that issue.
Well, I think you're right.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and we're simply talking about the plight of the workers in America as more and more jobs are lost. And they admit now that 17,000 jobs were lost last month. Certainly, or perhaps it was in the month of December, but ordinarily they're telling us, oh, we added 200,000 jobs or more, and then suddenly they talk about 17,000 jobs lost last month. And, of course, these are many times are good-paying jobs, and the new jobs that will come down the line will be very poor-paying jobs. So go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, they adjusted the birth-death ratio this past month in January, and the real loss in jobs through that adjustment, supposedly bringing it back to zero, so to speak, was I think the figure was 355,000. These are the make-believe figures that they reported during the course of the year, you know, month by month. And so, you know, over 10 months, that's 35,000 a month. That's a lot of jobs that supposedly were made, created, that weren't. And those are the figures you don't see, because you have to go and dig those out. I have a number of figures pertaining to that and this issue coming up, and that'll be out on Wednesday. And so those of you who want to get a free copy, and those of you who are already subscribers, you'll get to see that. But all the statistics that the government puts out are bogus. And they started in 1982 changing the formulas not only for employment, but also for the CPI and the PPI. And
now that's consumer price index and the producer price index, right? CPI and PPI. Go ahead.
Right, and on the PPI, often the figures don't totally relate to the CPI, and the reason why is that sometimes companies will absorb the difference in the total cost of things, or they will make improvements in productivity. So if you look and you see that on an annualized basis PPI is up, say, 6%, it could very well not be related to CPI at that level. It all depends on what happens in between. It's just that on the CPI, it is so distorted. I mean, this is the normal one, which is about 4.3%. They have this thing called a core, and the core omits energy and food. And gee, I mean, we all use energy and food. So what is the sense in even having a index like this, because it doesn't mean anything?
But of course, what they're doing is trying to sway the attitude of the American people and make them think that things really aren't so bad, and it's really only 2.1%. Well, it's 4.1 if you want to put those other things in there, but you know, it's really only 2.1%. The core inflation, they keep talking about that, and it's simply a vehicle of confusing people, so they will not realize that we are engulfed in the ravages of inflation. And even if we take their figures, you know, as gospel, 4.1% is high, but you really believe it's really closer to 10%, don't you?
My figure is based on 1980, or 11.6%.
11.6% at the present time, huh?
And there's only one other person that I know of puts out those kind of figures. And he's an economist as well. And his figures in unemployment are around 12.5%.
Is that Walter Williams?
Mine are 14.
Is that J. Walter Williams you're speaking of? Or?
Yes, that's correct.
That the shadow government statistics, I think it is. But anyway,
that's correct.
And the website is well worthwhile. We've talked to him. He said he is studying this, and of course, the M3 is one of the important things. That's the figure the government won't publish anymore because it's just too expensive and it doesn't mean anything. Well, if it's so expensive and doesn't mean anything, why did they publish it for so many years? But of course, it really is. It allows us to anticipate what's going to be happening. And based upon the M3 figures, you figured we're going to have what rate of inflation by the end of the year if they don't change?
15%.
All right, so that means you lose 15% of your value in a year of everything that you have that's fixed to dollar assets. So, I mean, this is really rather frightening, and it represents an irresponsible government trapped in a situation of their own making, but that's trying to solve all the problems that are facing the world by just pouring out money, creating money out of nothing. And inflation, remember, it has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increasing the money supply. And when you increase the supply of money, why, you increase the price of goods, because you have more money chasing fewer goods, and the price obviously goes up. And this is going to have devastating effects down the line. Certainly everything that Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve Board are doing at the present time to just massively increase the money supply is certainly the basis upon which they got into trouble with the Weimar Republic. They got into trouble certainly in Argentina a few years ago, in Russia back in the early 1990s. It's only a matter of time before we see the same devastating things happening here.
Yeah, you're right. And what's disturbing about the figures is that all the economists out there know what's going on. And here you have two or three or four people who are reporting the truth based upon 1980, and they won't do it. I mean, you get no assistance, no help whatsoever, because everybody in the field is employed by a bank, a brokerage house, a corporation or government, and they can't speak out because if they do, they'll lose their jobs. And so, you know, you end up being, again, a voice in the wilderness.
Well, of course, that old saying, figures don't lie, but liars can sure figure, and that's exactly what they're doing. But the government doesn't want the people to know what's really going on, so they pay economists, and they tell them what they want them to come up with, and they come up with it, and they're lying and deceiving the American people. But why should we be surprised at that? This is certainly what's happened for many, many years. Because our government is no longer controlled by moral and ethical people, but by people who actually make it a practice to lie and deceive the public, and they're sure doing a good job of it. And, of course, what's going to happen is most people are going to lose everything they have before this is over.
You're right, and I just wish more people would tune in to your program and others like it and realize really what's going on.
Well,
it's a hard sell because it's unnatural, and people don't want to be told that things aren't good and why they're not good. It's a natural reaction to say, well, how do I know that? And then the second reaction is, well, don't bother me with the facts. I'm too busy to think about such things.
Well, you know, really, when you begin to understand what's going on, then you can read these articles, and they have meaning. For instance, the articles about the people who've written insurance on the bonds, they call them derivatives. They've written derivatives. But, you know, we've got two makers, two companies. One is called AMBAC, and the other is called MBIA. And probably together between them, they might have $1 billion, but they've written insurance and guaranteed the payment on bonds that are worth over $1 trillion. And as those bonds go bad, there's no way that they're going to have the money to pay off the insurance policies they've written. And, of course, then what happens? The whole monetary system begins to come down. And that's just one aspect of the monetary system. I mean, that $1 trillion in derivatives is only a small part of the world derivative market, or even the derivatives that are actually written here in the United States.
Well, you know, you say to yourself, how do they, in the first place, allow companies to get that far away from the ability to pay off?
Well, because they wouldn't.
It's unbelievable.
They refuse to regulate these. I mean, they'll regulate everything. They'll regulate, the function of all sorts of drugs and the function of all sorts of things, but they won't regulate something that has the potential to destroy the financial stability of our nation, which was derivatives. And there was a call to regulate that and the carry trade and other things, you know. 5 to 10 years ago, and of course Alan Greenspan refused to do that, and now of course we're in this terrible, terrible fix we are today, and I don't see any way to coming out of it other than to print more money to try to bail out these companies, AMBAC and MBIA and the other derivative writers, but of course that will eventually destroy the foundation of our monetary system, because you massively increase the money supply, you decrease the value of the money.
That's right, and you know, the only way that they can bail out those insurers and make sure they stay in business is for the banks to do it, and the banks don't have the money because they're borrowing $9 billion here and $7 billion there from Singapore and Abu Dhabi and princes from the Middle East and so on. And they just don't have the money, so the only place the money can come from is the Fed Reserve. So the Fed gives the money to the banks, and the banks turn around and rescue the insurance companies. The problem is that the Fed makes up the money out of thin air, and the collateral they take in, half of which is not worth the paper it's written on, that collateral gets sold off later, and the banks don't have to pay the money back, which is a gift, essentially, to the banks.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Well, Bob, you're saying that the banks that are putting up these collateralized debt obligations and the asset-backed securities and the structured investment vehicles and all these things that really aren't worth maybe half of the face value. And, of course, the Federal Reserve is taking that as security on the money they're loaning. And no bank, no public bank would dare do that because it's economically not sound.
Well, the reason the Fed can do it is that they are the central bank, they are private, and they can create money out of nothing. And so they don't lose anything because they haven't invested anything. They just created something that didn't exist previously, in this case, money and credit. And so the Fed doesn't care. The paper gets sold into the market, and that's a monetization process. And that gets highly inflationary immediately. And that's why it's easy for me to say that real inflation is going to be over 15% next year. And if that's the case, official government inflation will be 8 or 9% toward the end of the year. They can't get away with that. I mean, they'll have to come up with a figure that's at least in that vicinity. And then people will really understand that inflation is worse than they had been told previously, and it's getting worse. And that's going to go on indefinitely. Indefinitely, to me, in this case, is 2 or 3 or 4 years at the maximum, because you have a combination of factors. You have a credit crisis where banks won't lend to each other, because they don't know whether they get their money back, and they don't know what's on the bank balance sheet or off the balance sheet that other banks have because they're all lying. And then, of course, you have the CDL, ABS problem. ABS is asset-backed securities, and those are loans made up of credit cards and vehicle loans and pools and mobile homes and motorcycles and that sort of thing. And then the collateralized debt obligations, which are bonds that are made up of mortgages. And then you have the fall in the real estate industry, which has been going on now actually for 2.5 years, since June of 05. Yeah, 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And that's going to continue, because after the subprime and the ALTA loans are worked through, we get next on the agenda the pick and pay loans, which are adjustable rate mortgages, which are usually last about 5 years. Sometimes the terms are shorter, and they're going to be coming due, and you have an option there. You can just pay interest only on a teaser loan, and or you can try to reduce as well in each payment the principal that you have in the loan. But not many people do that, because the idea is to get the low payments and take advantage of an appreciating housing market. And of course, unfortunately for those people, you can't do that, because the houses have not gone up in value. They've gone down. And it reaches a point where people who own the homes...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is talking about the problems that increasingly homeowners are having. Those people who have large loans on their homes, and even some of them that are very, very large homes, and some people who are making a fairly good income, but they've taken loans out, sort of adjustable rate mortgages. Sometimes they call them pick and pay mortgages, where you certainly only pay your interest. You don't pay anything on the principal. And those, of course, are coming due to be reconstituted here next year after 5 years. But the problem is that on a lot of these homes, people are going to be owing more on the house than the house is actually worth on the open market, because the price in many areas of the country, the prices on homes are coming down. Now, not necessarily where I live, but certainly in areas like San Diego and in Florida and in Las Vegas and in Phoenix, and these areas that saw such a dramatic increase in the price of homes, now the price is beginning to drop. And of course, when that happens, why, you know, suddenly you're making payments on a home and you're going to have to refinance that home that isn't worth, you know, what you owe on it. And so then what do you do, Bob?
Well, they won't do the refinance, even at a higher rate, if the loan that you have is underwater. So if the house, let's say the house costs $500,000, you know, if it's worth $470,000, they want you to come up with $30,000, and then they'll make the loan. And so that makes things very difficult, because the reason why the people had that kind of loan in the first place was to take advantage of price depreciation, not depreciation. And so what happens is that the homeowner walks away from the loan or can't get one. And that's happening frequently. That's why they want Congress to authorize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to be able to guarantee loans in excess of $417,000, which is the level now. But the problem is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they know this in the Beltway, and I know it, but most people don't. They're bankrupt. They're essentially bankrupt, and they're both raising money in the capital markets, but they're increasing their loans again. They're out buying these garbage loans, and I don't know where it's all going to end. And even the people who in companies like Countrywide and Washington Mutual and Wachovia and B of A, they have been borrowing large amounts of money from the Federal Home Loan Banks, you know, $50 billion at a whack. I mean, this is some very serious money. And now there's a process going on where Bank of America is going to buy, or attempt to buy, I should say, Countrywide for $4 billion. And the problem is that one of the large shareholders in Countrywide is going to vote against it. And I can't think for the life of me why, because it broke. And so it'll be interesting to see how that ends up, because the company Countrywide could easily go out of business. And so,
and of course, this is the largest issuer of mortgages in the country, and they're facing complete bankruptcy if the Bank of America doesn't buy them. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, I think they would go under almost immediately. You know, it's interesting, they say that they're cutting back on lending, and especially in loans that could be problematic, like adjustable rate mortgages. And yet we have letters from subscribers who say, I just got this letter from Countrywide, and it essentially says, we'll give you anything you want.
Because why in heaven's name does Bank of America want to buy Countrywide? I mean, admittedly, they've already invested $2 billion in a loan. Are they trying to cover themselves? But down the line, the day of reckoning is going to come, because Countrywide has large numbers of these collateralized debt obligations that may only be worth 20 or 30 cents on the dollar that they're listed as. I mean, I would think the Bank of America would not put themselves into that sort of a situation. We're talking about, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of potential loss.
Well, you're right, and the reason why is the Fed has instructed B of A to do it.
Well, I certainly wouldn't.
And they're giving them the money to do it.
Right. Well, you wouldn't want to throw bad money after good, but I suppose if you've got the Federal Reserve System just printing up more money or creating more money out of nothing, why, it sounds like it's too good to be true. But down the line, of course, you have to pay the piper, and the piper is going to be very expensive. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and we're talking about so many of the things that are going on financially and trying to get people used to this jargon, to the phrases that we're using, what these various terms mean. But what it really all boils down to is there's going to be less and less money for the American people to pay off their loans, because basically with the price of gasoline going up, they're going to have to pay for that. The price of food's going up, they're going to have to pay for that. And the people, of course, who are actually, then they've got a choice between food and paying on their loans, and, well, they're probably going to get the food. And unfortunately, we're creating a situation where I think more and more people are going to be more or less forced to default on their loans, and we can begin to see a cascading coming down of the whole financial system, not only in the United States, but throughout the world, because the European banks are involved in the same situation. Even the largest bank in Switzerland, banks in Great Britain. In fact, Bob was saying earlier today, he thinks that it was the Federal Reserve System that gave the money to the Bank of England to bail out the Northern Rock. Why do you believe that would be?
Well, because the Bank of England may not be able to create money in the same way that the Fed can. Now, I know that the European Central Bank cannot. So they could not have created the $1 trillion they injected in the system. That $1 trillion had to have come from the Fed. And so I'm suspecting the same thing is true with the Bank of England and maybe other banks as well. We don't know. And I also think that when they had the crisis in which the European Central Bank over the past 6 months saved the banks in Spain because the Spanish housing market was coming apart, it had to be the Fed that was behind that. Because the European Central Bank cannot create money and credit in that manner for that reason. They're supposed to let those banks go under. And so that tells me is that's where it came from. I'm the only one in the world that's saying that I know about. And again, probably the voice in the wilderness is probably right. You know, you look at a situation, you think about your experience in these matters, and you back into an answer. And that's what I try to do sometimes. That didn't occur to me until today.
All right. So we're going to
go step by step. And you say
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with our station. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And Bob is simply pointing out that when the European Central Bank put out $1 trillion, and the United States has put out about $500 billion, made it available simply to try to stop this hemorrhage of funds and try to stabilize the banking system in both Europe and America, and understand that suddenly according to Bob, why the European Central Bank doesn't have the capacity to create money the way that we do here. Our Federal Reserve System is the central bank's banker's central bank. For all intents and purposes, we are the source of the reserve currency that's used throughout the world. And so they just print up more reserve currency or create those credits or the bonds. And we're trying to bail out the whole world. But the problem is, it's highly inflationary, and the more money and credit you create, why, of course, the sooner your currency loses value. Well, before we go on, Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the International Forecaster and maybe subscribe. I would point out that it comes out twice a week. I look forward to it every week because Bob has information you will never read elsewhere, or he'll have it before you read it elsewhere. A great source of information, and if you hope to survive the coming financial tsunami, the perfect financial storm that's underway, why, you need to have his information available. So go ahead, Bob. Why don't you go ahead and put a plug in for your publication?
Of course. The International Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we publish via the Internet on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually runs around 30 pages. And we have a hard copy that comes out twice a month as well. And if you'd like to visit our site to get a free introductory copy, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. If you'd like to email us, because you have a question, that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com. And also, to get a free copy, you can call toll-free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Of course, I certainly recommend the Forecaster. It's a fascinating source of information. Well, Bob, certainly, as we see this whole scenario unfolding, and, of course, the average individual doesn't understand money. I mean, he's not a trained economist, and certainly most of what the trained economists are putting out, the government economists are, you know, they're trying to paint a rosy picture. But the problem is, why you listen to people who really are smart, people like Stephen Rhodes, who was formerly the chief economic advisor at Morgan Stanley, and he tells us we're going into one of the worst recessions we've ever seen. Jim Rogers, who was formerly a partner there of George Soros, the financial guru, and Jim Rogers says that it's going to be the worst recession we've ever seen, you know, because we're, instead of letting the thing take place, they're trying to put this off, and the longer they put it off, the worse it's going to be. Would you agree with those philosophies?
I certainly do, and it's just a shame that there's a handful, we'll say 20 or 25 economists who come out and say what I say in the International Forecaster and what you've just cited. And they've got to know what's going on because they work at it, you know, day in and day out. There are a lot of people who have been in business and finance and economics. Some of them have masters and doctorates that really don't understand what we're talking about until we talk about it. And then they kind of catch on. But the average person just doesn't know. And that's why we talk about these things in the program and make them simple so that they can understand them without the complexity of all of the background noise that accompanies the things that we talk about.
Well, if for our listeners out there, if you have access to a computer, certainly go ahead and Google in Stephen Roach recession or Jimmy Rogers depression. There's another individual I really have the greatest respect for. His name is Joseph Stiglitz, S-T-I-G-L-I-T-Z, and he's a Nobel Prize winning economist that worked for the World Bank. He was chief economist for the Council of Economic Advisors under the Clinton administration. But he's come out and said we're heading into a depression. Now, what's the difference between a recession and a depression?
Well, in a recession, you're out of work.
And, all right, go ahead.
In a depression, everybody's out of work.
All right, fine. I thought the recession was when your neighbor was out of work, and the depression was when you're out of work. But anyway,
well, that's okay. I'll accept it.
All right.
The difference is, a recession is a time of low productivity and high unemployment. And the worst of all worlds in a recession is when all of that happens and there's inflation at the same time, which is stagnation and inflation, which is called stagflation. And that was a term created by Harry Schultz many years ago during the 1970s. Who produces the Harry Schultz letter, and he was probably the foremost letter writer of our times. Most people haven't heard of him because it's a European-generated letter, although he's an American and has lived in Europe all those years since 1964. After that, when you have depression, you don't have inflation. What you have is deflation, and that is 10 times worse than inflation because you don't know when it's going to stop. It's bad. Like in the 1930s, one-third of the people were out of work, and yes, people lost their homes in great numbers as they are today, but there wasn't inflation. There was inflation in the 1920s. Up until 1929, but that's about it. And so, that's the difference between the two of them.
And of course, during the Great Depression, we had a solid currency. At least it potentially had gold backing. They were playing with gold prices, but I mean, at least our currency was respected throughout the world. There was a nominal gold backing behind our currency, and the Federal Reserve could not print all the money it wanted to. I mean, it was bound by law only to, I think, print what it had to have a 40% gold backing. Well, then they doubled the price of gold so they could print twice as much, but nothing like the rampant inflation we're seeing today.
That's true, and we could well come to that because, as you say, we had gold backing. And another thing is we were a creditor nation, and today we're a debtor nation, a big debtor nation. And that makes it even worse. Plus, we have the debt of individuals, but, you know, in the 1930s there weren't any credit cards. It was very hard to get credit. The only people who gave credit were, like, furniture salespeople, who would mark up the furniture a little bit more in order to cover the possibility of loss by extending credit. And so there weren't a lot of people in debt. And what happened was you saw the results of that. And if all things being equal, using logic, this is going to be a lot worse. 3 or 4 or 5 times, maybe 10 times worse. And we're leading into this problem by the Fed actually going berserk. I mean, they're bailing out the banking system and the American economy, and we can understand why they're doing it if we understand that they are doing it. Most people don't. But in the process, they're destroying the dollar, they're destroying the credit of the United States, and they're consuming all of the assets of American people and business by continuing to create this monetary inflation.
Well, what is the dollar doing now? Of course, the dollar's lost probably 35 to 40% of its value over the last several years in comparison with the basket of currencies, in comparison with the euro. Well, what's happening to the dollar? Last thing I ever heard, it was down to pushing about, what, 71 or 72? Where is it now?
No, it was 75 and a half or so today.
Okay, so
it started to move back up again, but today was a down day, which surprised me, because on a day like that, gold should have been up, and it was off $4 or so. And you can't use any logic or charts, or cycles, or waves in the market anymore, because we have a thing called the Working Group of Financial Markets, which allows the United States government to go into the market and manipulate it. And so you see things happen that have never happened before. And, of course, when you have that kind of government, you essentially have a fascist government.
But don't you think that what they're trying to do is get the American people not to worry? Everything's all right. Look at the Dow Jones is hanging in there. It's even up. Well, of course, it was down today, but, you know, usually you're not doing that badly. It's not dropping precipitously. And, of course, people's attitude is reflected by their perception of what's happening to the economy, because we're all really, of course, motivated by fear and greed, or usually by greed and then the fear, the secondary thing when you suddenly realize what's really happening. But, you know, so they manipulate the market to control the emotions of the American people so they won't frantically sell their stocks. Don't you believe that's what they're really doing?
Yeah, it's the perception. And if people are told that there's not a problem, they would tend not to listen to you and I. They would listen to what the government had to say, or Wall Street, or what the media had to say, which is controlled by the powers behind government. And so it's a tough battle to make people understand what's going on. And you know, it's right in front of them. They can see it. But they just don't want to believe it.
And, of course, increasingly, why, of course, there's a call to find another reserve currency besides the dollar, because the dollar was a reserve currency because it was stable. It is no longer stable. America is the greatest creditor nation the world has ever seen, having to borrow over $2.5 billion every day, $2.5 billion every day just to pay its debts. And of course, you look at the president's new budget, and we don't know how far that is going to go, but it's probably going to be well over $400 billion, and that totally ignores the fact they're stealing all the money from Social Security and Medicare, and that should be going into a trust fund, but it doesn't. They simply spend it. And they get around that by putting an IOU into the trust fund, a little folder that they have somewhere in Washington, D.C. And that's the Social Security Trust Fund for the future, but who will pay the IOU? The government has no money except what it takes from us by force through taxation, or what it borrows, or what it creates by simply printing more money and destroying the value of the currency. And all those IOUs aren't really worth the paper they're written on, are they?
No, they're not, unfortunately. And it's been a pay-as-you-go system since June of 1935. You know, Roosevelt had his hand in there right away. And they just take the money and put it in the general account and use it for, you know, governmental purposes. And they've been doing it since the beginning. And now they have more collectors than they have payers into the system. And the system will eventually collapse. And it's too bad, because even though it's socialistic in nature, it really fit a need. There's a lot of people out there that don't make enough money or don't have the acumen for saving. And you know, in their latter days, even if they live to 70, I mean, people live to be 78 to 82 today, and some longer. And they just don't have the wherewithal otherwise to exist.
And unfortunately, the system was set up to fail. But of course, it'll be in, they hope it'll be some future time. Well, unfortunately, that future time started to unfold on January 1st of this year, as the baby boomers began to retire at 62 years of age. And as more and more retire, and then 3 years from now, are they be eligible for Medicare? And then the Medicare system begins to come unraveled. And if you, of course, read the writings of David Walker, that's David Walker, who's the supervisor of the currency, a controller general of the currency, and he will tell you we're bankrupt. Simply go up on the Internet and Google in David Walker, and America is bankrupt, and they'll take you right to his website, read what he says. We are bankrupt. But, you know, the American people don't know that yet. And, of course, what's making it even worse are the interminable wars that we fight. And instead of increasing the taxes to pay for them, they cut the taxes so that we feel happy and we've got all that money. President Bush says he wants the American people to keep their money. Well, I'm all in favor of the people keeping their money, but you've got to cut government spending. And yet they're increasing government spending at every turn. So what should people be doing, Bob?
Well, as we've said for many years in the program, you start with your credit card debt and get rid of it, and the revolving debt, and then your vehicles, because there's a good chance over the next year or two that one of you is not going to be at work, will be laid off, and you want to try to keep your house. So if you don't have any other debt, that's a great way to go. And then the next step would be to buy gold and silver-related assets, because in an inflationary environment in which we're in, they will appreciate in value, gold being the only real currency in the world. And incidentally, in the last 3.5 years, every currency in the world has fallen versus gold. So, you know, there's the proof right there. and that's why gold isn't selling for $252 an ounce anymore. It's selling for around $900. And so you say, am I too late? No, you're not. We've got two more legs to go in the gold bull market, what I call the greatest bull market of all time. And just to reflect real inflation since 1980, we need $3,000 or more gold. And then markets always overreact. Then we have the time period between now and the time that gold reaches $3,000 an ounce. That could be 2 or 3 years. So then you're going to have to add in that inflation. So we could be talking $5,000 or $6,000 an ounce. So we got a long way to go.
Well, I think if people really have to begin to understand what's going on, we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. All right, Bob, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, we've covered at the end here what you should do. What you should be on the lookout for is if you're in the stock market, you really should be out. I think that if the banks or the Fed via the banks do not bail out the bond insurers, that municipal bonds are going to take a terrible beating. And the reason why is they are not sold on their own city, county, state credit rating, which might be A or B or something like that. They're sold on the basis of the credit rating of the insurer. Now,
that's the derivatives we were talking about earlier, right?
Right. ACA is under government regulatory control right now. Their rating's been dropped. Another company called FCIA, and then a larger company, which is AMBAC, has been dropped from AAA to AA. And that means that many of the institutions that own those insured bonds, municipals, have to sell them, and because they can't have anything less than AAA in their portfolio. And that means that there's going to be some real ravaging going on because the value of the bonds will drop. And, you know, you don't want to be there when that happens. So, you know, for the sake of safety, I'm telling people to get out and go to cash. If you have to be in that mode, you stay in Swiss franc government bonds until we find out, in fact, if they're going to be bailed out. We don't know. We suspect they might, but we don't know. And so you're going to have to make those moves. And there's a lot of things going on in the market that market professionals just don't understand because they don't know what psychopolitical warfare is all about.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think people are going to have to be very, very defensive, and certainly I think more and more of the city and county governments, even the state governments, are going to have trouble making the payments on their bonds, because as the incomes of their people begin to go down, as the value of the houses begin to go down, as the sales tax incomes begins to go down, certainly they're not getting that much money out of their state income tax or city income tax, and there are going to be a lot of these communities that are not going to have the money even to pay their employers, much less pay off their bonds. And, of course, if everybody else is defaulting, why shouldn't you? Bob, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks so very much for being with us.
We'll see you next time.
Right on.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and for those of you who would like more information on what's going on, we have a talk we gave called Financial Tsunami. It's available on DVD or video, and it comes with a syllabus which certainly will give you tremendous insight into what's going on. Don't have to get the syllabus, but we recommend you do. And then, of course, we have my pamphlet on the history of money and a new pamphlet we put together called Financial Meltdown. They're inexpensive. We feel that this will give you a good background of what's going on. Certainly, we actually carry two books now. One of them is called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, by Professor Sutton, a good friend, before he passed away, and then another called Fiat Money, Inflation in France, about the what happened in France in 1789 when they came up with an idea that they could simply print money and, based upon the using as valuation the property that they'd stolen from the Catholic Church at the time of the French Revolution. And what happened to France with the paper money system? Fiat money, paper inflation in France. It's like deja vu all over again. Short little book, but a very important book to understand what indeed is going on today. So if you're interested in learning more about these items, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to know the suggested contribution to get these items. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get my writings on the Brotherhood of Darkness, on the Forbidden Truth. That's a talk, and it's it comes with a syllabus. And then, of course, the book, Satanic Crimes, and there's a four-tape or four-CD set that comes with that. The 4D tape or CD set on the supernatural, with my interviews with Johanna Michelson and certainly in interviews with another gentleman on Aleister Crowley. And, of course, there's a book we suggest you get called The Beautiful Side of Evil. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson, who is a medium, who actually had the ability to be in contact with the beings from the other dimension. And, of course, she really was so impressed as she actually participated in these healings, these spiritual healings, and saw people with incurable diseases cured. And what a wonderful thing to be able to help people. Until eventually she realized that this was all demonic. And she went back and talked to these people, and so many of them had all sorts of problems and were demonically possessed. And until you understand that there really is another dimension, and we're told about this repeatedly in the Bible, whether it be in Deuteronomy, we're warned against, of course, trying to delve into this other dimension, the dimension of the diviners, of the mediums, of the fortune tellers, of the spiritualists, of the Satanists, and certainly of the wicked and witchcraft. And yet, so much of this is infiltrating every aspect of our society today, and more and more Christians are being led away from the true teachings of Christianity into a new type of Christianity, a new religious doctrine where God loves everybody and everybody's going to come into the kingdom of heaven. And there is no punishment for sin. There is no judgment. There is certainly no thought that God might bring judgment upon a nation or upon an individual. And that is Satan's lie. Because if that's true, we really don't need a Savior, do we? Well, understand what's going on. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And Radio Liberty's out there on the front lines of this. Don't ask me how a retired orthopedic surgeon got into this ministry, but I believe that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And sounding the alarm, along with a few of our friends across the nation, warning people about what's going on. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free catalog of one sort or another, we actually have three catalogs, different catalogs on health or on long-term storage food or just on our products. But pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And of course, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Garth Nicholson, who is formerly a professor at the H.B. Anderson Clinic and Associated Medical School in Texas. And of course, he came under tremendous pressure there after he began to investigate the Gulf War illness and this whole series of medical illnesses, whether it be chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or the chronic illnesses that so many people have today, and found out, of course, that they'd actually been experimenting on the prisoners at the Huntsville prison in Texas, and then, of course, the infections that had been given to the people there, to the convicts, began to spread into the guards and then into their families. And here we have an epidemic of multiple sclerosis. So you don't get epidemics of multiple sclerosis and anterior lateral sclerosis, these certainly are things that just don't happen, and yet they happen in Huntsville. And as Garth began looking into it and trying to help the people, why, he frightened people at the highest levels of our government who are involved in these illegal experiments, and believe me, they do experiment on the American people. And he came under tremendous pressure, and after several people he worked with died under very mysterious circumstances, and his immediate superior there at the MB Anderson Clinic was killed with 6 bullets in the back of his head. Why, Garth figured maybe he'd better take off, and that's why he came to California. Of course, by coming to California, it's been to our advantage because we'd love to have him on here. But Dr. Nicholson is certainly known throughout the scientific community as a careful researcher. Last time I checked, over 600 peer-reviewed articles. How many articles do you have now, Garth?
Well, it's about that. It hasn't changed all that much.
All right, fine. Well, you go ahead and pick up this story, because, of course, one of the things is that recently, why, they've been hacking into Garth's website and removing information having to do with the illnesses that our veterans are getting as a result of their exposure when they're inducted in the service and sent to the Near East or the Middle East. So you pick up the story there, Dr. Nicholson.
Well, that's actually one of the reasons for our broadcast tonight, is the fact that our website, the Institute for Molecular Medicine, which is www.immed.org, like immediate.org, had been hacked, and a lot of the information, particularly on veterans' illnesses and other chronic illnesses in the civilian population, had been redacted. It had actually been removed from the website. And other areas where congressional testimony, for example, or publications had been placed in, there were huge parts of the manuscripts which were actually blacked out. So we had to replace all those documents, which we did. In fact, we did it within 24 hours. But just the fact that it was done, and the fact that we couldn't trace who did it, led us to believe that there were people that did not want this information to be accessed by the general public.
And of course, there are other people who have come the same, had the same experience. You mentioned Merrill Nass, and of course, the reason I knew about it, Garth sent me an email and asked me if we'd been hacked, and I guess we're not very effective because, to my knowledge, we've not been hacked yet, but we really should take a look at our webpage. But what happened to Merrill Nass, who's a very, very effective doctor? They're doing a lot of study on the anthrax vaccine that's been used to cripple so many of our soldiers.
Well, they had some documents that were tampered with there, and they also broke all the links that she had made. A lot of the documents on her website were hyperlinked to other locations, and the hyperlinks were all broken. So that's something that she'll have to go back through all her documents and replace all the hyperlinks.
And, of course, you have to understand there is an effort to conceal the truth.
Absolutely.
All right, you go ahead right now and simply, you know, because you have so much information. You have information on your website that nobody else has, and it's so vitally important that people understand the illnesses and the cause of the illnesses that are affecting in tens, hundreds of thousands of our servicemen.
Well, these are illnesses which are caused by infection that used to be really confined to the military and their dependents, their immediate family members, and also areas like you mentioned where the civilian population has been experimented on, such as the prison system and other places where experiments were undertaken to find out about these infections and also countermeasures against them. But we have for years been working on undiagnosable illnesses in veterans, and often this happened, or it happened with very high frequency after the first Gulf War, where very large numbers, more than 250,000 veterans of the first Gulf War became slowly ill with various chronic illnesses, which were essentially undiagnosable, or at the time they were calling it stress, a post-traumatic stress disorder. But in fact, their diagnoses did not fit that. They really had legitimate medical reasons for their illnesses. And we found in about 40 to 45% of these patients that they had an unusual infection. It turns out this was the same infection that we'd also found later in the prison guards and their family members in Huntsville and other selected areas in Texas, where we think that these particular infections were being investigated before the Gulf War. This is during the 80s, long before the Gulf War, almost a decade before the Gulf War. So we feel that this is an important example of where these kinds of experiments can get out of control and get into the population and then penetrate further and further, just because nobody wants to acknowledge their presence, nobody wants to treat the infections, and nobody really understands them very much because they cause so many different signs and symptoms, many of them nonspecific, so there's nothing very unique about it. And a lot of these patients were diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia syndrome, as you mentioned, but also many of them had autoimmune diseases and neurodegenerative diseases. And we were quite interested in the neurodegenerative diseases. In fact, I just finished a major review on this. And in particular, as you mentioned, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis or MS, lupus, and a variety of other diseases which we found.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Nicholson is saying that certainly about 200 to 250,000 of the veterans who returned from the first Gulf War, and remember, there were about 695,000 men over there, men and women, and about 200,000 to 250,000 of them came down with simply progressive diseases, nondescript diseases following the Gulf War, first Gulf War. And, of course, many of them were autoimmune diseases. Many of them were progressive neurological diseases, MS, multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And, of course, Dr. Nicholson began to investigate these. And these are the things that were taken down from his website because, of course, many of the veterans coming back from the second Gulf War that were engaged in the present time certainly are coming down with very, very similar symptoms, and large numbers of them are incapacitated. About a third of them, after they're home for just a few months, will begin to develop these diseases. And we know that there's an infectious component to them because, at least in the first Gulf War, many of the wives of the veterans came down with the diseases. So they infected the family. They were contagious diseases and very, very similar to the disease that Dr. Nicholson had identified at Huntsville, Texas. And was it pretty much the same organism, the same genetically created organism that was found in the people there with Veterans Administration after the first Gulf War? Was that
the
same?
Well, it turns out now there were more than one microorganism, but the one that we studied the most, which we found in the highest frequency, was an organism called Mycoplasma fermentans. And it turns out the U.S. Army holds the patent, the only patent issued on this particular microorganism, which is held by an Army pathologist. So we knew that this had links to the military. A lot of the research had been conducted at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Washington, D.C., or other branches of the military. So we knew that there was a military link to all this, that they had done a lot of the research on this, and also laboratories under military contract had done a lot of the research on this outside the military. So there was a very strong military link all along. We didn't know that when we started our studies. That was one of the infections. There were other infections that were found, and I could go on about that, but that's not the important point. The important point is that the infection started to spread into the family members and into the spouses and into the children. And it's interesting because the children were really presenting with a really different constellation of diseases compared to the adults. And most often in the children, they were showing up with autistic spectrum disorders, autism, attention deficit disorder, Asperger's syndrome, and behavioral disorders like this, which are really disorders of learning and behavior in the young, and resulting in standoffish behavior, and often repetitive emotions, failure to learn, a lot of different problems, sensitivities to sound and touch, and so on. A lot of very unusual signs and symptoms in children. But, of course, we're seeing this now in the civilian population, alarming rates of autism, for example. And a lot of this can be traced back to the vaccines, the multiple vaccines that children receive before they go to school. But we think in the case of the military families that they actually got infections from their parents. And we were able to prove that by showing that the same infection that appeared in the parent, for example, the veteran, passed to the spouse and also passed to the children, because these are airborne infections as well as being transmitted by fluid exchange. So the children came down later after the parents became sick, so it was pretty obvious that closer contact resulted in higher rates of transmission, or at least sooner transmission. But eventually when the children became sick and we studied them, they had the same infection. So we've been working for years on how to treat these types of infections, and they are treatable. It requires a combination of different procedures, and all of this is really on our website. And these are the sorts of things which were attacked just this last week by people unknown. And we've been trying to follow up on this, but we still haven't found out who is responsible for doing this. And I don't know that we'll ever find out. But the important thing is that the information is now back on our website, and we do have the procedures for treatment, which are posted on there as well. Not only treatment of the fatiguing illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia syndrome, and Gulf War illness, but also, as I mentioned, there are separate documents for assisting parents whose children have attention deficit disorder, Asperger's syndrome, or autism. All these autism spectrum disorders that are now so often found in our children. And so we actually got very heavily involved in autism and related disorders. Now that's a very important part of our work at the moment, trying to understand all the problems that children have because of these infections. And when we looked at populations which had nothing to do with the military, we found not the same infection exactly that we found in the military families, but we found similar infections, and we found them in about 60% of the children. So we knew that this was an important problem. And just looking at that one type of infection, mycoplasma, that was found in about 60% in two different studies in California with the children that have these autism spectrum disorders. So we think that it's a very important component of those disorders, and we can see why, because these types of infections are what we call neurotrophic. They can penetrate into the central nervous system, and they can cause all kinds of problems. And this is one of the things that can happen in the developing brain, is that they can interfere with a lot of the brain circuits which have to develop when a child develops to have ordinary and normal behavior. And so this can interfere with that. In the case of adults, if these infections are around for too long, it can cause neurodegeneration. And it does that by simply triggering the programs that cause cell death. And in the case of for example, Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, there's a specific area of the brain that dies. The cells, the neurons, the nerve cells in that area eventually die, and this is really what causes the disease. And this particular infection will get in those areas and trigger that process. It's not the only thing we think that can trigger the process, but it's very prominent. In fact, in the Gulf War veterans that came down with ALS, and there was a very unusual epidemic of ALS in Gulf War veterans in terms of the number compared to the number that would be expected from the age group. There were 1,000 times more incidents of these types of problems like ALS and MS and so on. And in we studied the ALS cases, and they did have the Mycoplasma fermentans, 100% of the cases. So we not only examined U.S. veterans, but we had some Australian, Canadian, and British veterans as well. So it turns out any of the countries that used the military vaccines, like the anthrax vaccine, had these problems.
But, of course, was the anthrax vaccine, did it contain the mycoplasma, do you think?
Well, we think it might have contained the mycoplasma, although we've never been able to get samples to prove that. Those samples were kept from us. And, in fact, the only time they offered to send us a sample, which was one sample from Fort Detrick, I really didn't trust it. I thought it might have, you know, they could have very easily sent us a sanitized sample and then claim that there is no evidence for it. But they were only willing to send one or two samples, one or two lots, and that is really inadequate. You really have to study the entire series of lots of vaccines that were used, because the chances of contamination being in every lot are, of course, very remote. It's probably only a few of the lots which might have been contaminated. But in fact, we see this in vaccines, commercial vaccines. In fact, there's a publication in the journal Vaccine that shows that vaccines like veterinary vaccines, it's a very common contaminant. Mycoplasma is present in 6% of the commercial vaccines which are sold in the United States. So this is not an unusual event. I didn't realize that when we started, but it's really it turns out to be fairly common. And so in the case of the first Gulf War, when these veterans were being vaccinated with 20 different vaccines, 10 to 20 different vaccines in a three-day period, it was very immunosuppressive. And so if there were any contaminants in the vaccines, they could very easily grow out because of the immune suppression and become a major problem. So this is what we think happened during the first Gulf War. It's a little more complicated since then. During the second Gulf War, for example, and the troops that were deployed to Afghanistan, they received many of the same types of military vaccines, maybe not exactly the same lots of vaccines, but the same types of vaccines. But the military had learned since the first Gulf War to spread these out and give them over a 6 month to 1 year period instead of giving them all at once within a 3 day period, which is very immunosuppressive. So they did learn from that, and in fact the incidence of similar illnesses is much lower in the second Gulf War conflict and in Afghanistan. So they did learn their lesson, but we still have some problems. There's still some casualties, and they have not admitted the number of actual deaths from the first Gulf War. We've heard, in fact, this is a very confidential piece of information. I can't relay who told it to me, but it was an assistant undersecretary of defense, so it was somebody fairly high up in the Defense Department, who indicated that there were 28,000 deaths from the first Gulf War due to these kinds of problems.
All right, fine. Of course, these are young, healthy people who should not be dying, but they were. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Garth Nicholson. And, you know, Sydney, we're talking about this effort to suppress the information. Somebody hacked into his website and took off only the sort of information that people within the Defense Department would not necessarily want to be out in public, because the last thing, of course, that they would want is for the general public to know, and the young men who ordinarily would be volunteering to go in the military, is that they might very well be used as human guinea pigs and given these terrible diseases that would, of course, plague them for the rest of their lives. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Garth, you know, many people actually believe that the mercury and the aluminum in the vaccine plays the part. Would they in any way influence the immune system that would limit the immune system's ability to deal with these chronic infections? Would these heavy metals impact on the immune response?
Oh, yes, absolutely. As you know, one of the problems that we've been looking at and other scientists have been looking at in particular in terms of autism and autistic spectrum disorders in the vaccines are the mercury, which are put in mercury compounds are put in essentially to prevent bacterial contamination. And in fact, when they've removed these compounds from the vaccines, all of a sudden in other countries they've noticed that the rates of autism are now beginning to plateau or actually go down. So that is one of the problems, and we think that the main problem associated with mercury is not so much direct contamination and toxicity of mercury toxicity in the brain, but it's the effects on the immune system that play a major role, allowing opportunistic infections in to take hold, particularly ones that can get in the central nervous system, because those are the types of infections, viruses and bacteria that attack the central nervous system that seem to be the real culprits in diseases like autistic spectrum disorders. And they do play a role as well in a variety of other chronic illnesses and autoimmune illnesses and neurodegenerative diseases as well. So we know that there are a lot of different chronic illnesses where these types of infections, and there's several different infections now that we've been looking at, play a very important role. And of course, if you have a very healthy immune system, you can prevent these infections from taking hold. So really one of the aspects of this whole problem is the immune system and maintaining the proper health of the immune system. We cover that on our website. In fact, we give out information on how people can boost their immune systems using natural supplements and so on. And so a lot of that information is available to people on our website. And I'll give that again since it seems to be a popular website that people try to tamper with. www.immed.org. Just remember immediate.org. And once you find that website, you can go to, for example, under the various disease categories, like neurodegenerative diseases, for example, neurobehavioral diseases, or fatiguing illnesses, or Gulf War illnesses. And then there's a lot of information and publications under each section. But then you can go to treatment considerations and find documents and publications on everything from how to treat these infections, how to boost your immune system and the proper diets. There's even publications on dietary advice on there as well, because diet is very important in all these diseases. And people that don't maintain a proper diet are really putting themselves at risk for getting these opportunistic infections. So that's something that's important that we deal with as well.
All right, fine. Well, now, what are some of the other illnesses? In other words, what are some of the other organisms that are involved with these chronic infections? You mentioned the Mycoplasma fermentis, but what are some of the others?
Well, we've worked with Brucella, and Brucella is a type of illness that you find primarily in livestock, for example, cattle. And this has been developed. It was developed during World War II as an offensive biological warfare incapacitating agent. So we know the military...
Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just asking Dr. Nicholson, what are some of the other organisms? He'd mentioned there were multiple organisms that work primarily with the Mycoplasma fermentans, which is apparently genetically altered. The Army holds a patent on it. A military officer holds a Air Force, I believe, a pathologist holds the patent on that. Why would the Air Force want to hold a patent on a mycoplasma that appears to be genetically altered? Well, then, of course, Dr. Nicholson was mentioning some of the other diseases. One of them would be Brucella. We used to call it undulant fever, but it produces a chronic illness and really a very effective a means of incapacitating people that was worked on experimentally during the Second World War. So go right ahead, Dr. Nichols.
Yes, it was actually an Army pathologist who
I stand corrected. Thank you.
Mycoplasma fermentans, but there's a long history of work on Brucella. by the Army and particularly Fort Detrick and elsewhere, again developed as an offensive biological warfare incapacitating agent. And we found some of the veterans had Brucella, and so there are also a number of viruses that are involved primarily in the civilian form of the disease rather than the military form, and that information's on our website. And more recently, we've been looking at chronic fatigue patients that actually have Lyme disease. And so this is something that's an emerging illness which has become very important in the last few years because of the spread of the ticks virtually all across the country. But there are hot spots in various places, starting from New England, where it was originally discovered, across from Plum Island in Old Lyme, Connecticut. And that's where it got its name, Lyme disease. And Lyme disease is a very complex disease because it involves a variety of different infections, including Mycoplasma fermentans, which is one of the most common co-infections with the Lyme Borrelia, and it contains some other microorganisms as well, and even a parasitic microorganism. These, in a cocktail version, can cause a variety of different illnesses in patients, autoimmune diseases, for example. Even ALS cases have been found to have Lyme Borrelia and Mycoplasma, so that's something that is just being investigated now, but multiple sclerosis, a variety of other neurodegenerative diseases. Now we know Lyme disease seems to play a major role in a lot of these illnesses. And one of the things that has really intrigued me over the years is how these different infections cause these various different types of diseases. Because in medical school, as you know, Stan, and I did, I taught for 25 years in medical schools, you're basically taught that, well, one, you know, if it's a real infection, that infection will cause a real disease. That is something that's unique, like poliovirus causing polio, and there's a variety of examples of this. But, in fact, you're never taught in medical school that there are a number of unusual infections which can get together with other infections, co-infections, and cause very unusual types of illnesses which have no known etiology. And we were discussing some of these, the fatiguing illnesses, the autoimmune illnesses, and rheumatoid arthritis, for example, is another example of this, where the various different types of microorganisms can get in the synovium in the joints and cause inflammation and cause tremendous problems there. But this is another example, and rheumatologists just don't know about this, which is absolutely amazing because it's not really taught in medical school that these types of infections, whether it's the Lyme Borrelia and the co-infections in Lyme, or the mycoplasma, or these other infections that can get in the synovium and cause rheumatoid arthritis. And so there's just another example. When they get in various tissues, they can cause various problems. One of the topics that we're very interested in is the fact that when these get in the heart, they can cause inflammation of the heart, and eventually this can lead to a heart attack. And we were working with veterans, for example, from the first Gulf War that were, 25 years of age and had a massive infarct, and this is extremely unusual for somebody with no history of heart disease in their family, no history of heart disease, a non-smoker, in very good health, all of a sudden coming down with a massive heart attack within 6 months or so after returning from the Gulf War. Just very unheard of to have this happen, and these were the patients that were just riddled with these types of infections, and they had it in their heart. And when we were able to help cardiologists recognize this and treat these patients intensively for the infections, they recovered. We had some just dramatic examples of that, where people that were down to 10% heart function were able to turn it around and eventually get back about 50% heart function, and were able to get out of the intensive care unit, eventually go back to work. So these are kind of miracle turnarounds because they were very young, very healthy people that had this problem to begin with.
And I think it's really so tragic that most doctors, and I have to admit, before I got, quit medicine, I'd never heard of these things, but there are all these chronic infections out there that are very hard to diagnose. And if you're not looking for them, why, of course, you're not going to be able to treat them. And if you're not going to treat them, why, the patients aren't going to get well. We'll be right back in just a moment. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan Beck here. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about these chronic disabling diseases that are increasingly afflicting people across America. And whether we talk about chronic fatigue that's supposed to have a million people, and fibromyalgia, a couple of million, and Lyme's disease with another million, and are there any other syndromes that we think of that we should include here?
Well, we can include now the neurodegenerative diseases, where they play a major role. They may not actually cause the disease except in a subset of patients, like we found these military patients, but they certainly play a role in the progression of the disease. And in fact, I've just gone through this now, so you can include things like multiple sclerosis and, of course, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. Alzheimer's disease is affected by these infections. They can really promote it. Parkinson's disease infections, it's well known that can promote Parkinson's disease. And again, the list goes on and on. So there's a whole new set of neurological diseases now that we can explain, because up until recently we haven't been able to explain the explosive incidence increase in the incidence of these diseases in people that were not genetically linked. There was no apparent reason why these diseases, which used to be fairly rare, are now all of a sudden becoming very, very common. And we always thought, well, perhaps it's something in the environment, in the industrial age, that they're getting contaminated with heavy metals and a variety of other things. And yes, that does seem to be important, the chemical exposures, the heavy metal exposures, and so on. But up until recently, not much was thought about the fact that these emerging infections can get in people and get together with all these other toxic events and cause these various diseases. And so we're seeing just, again, an explosive increase in that. And you know, I mentioned the various autoimmune diseases, and that's kind of unusual how these infections cause the autoimmune disease, because they can actually take the antigens which can trigger the autoimmune disease, and the microorganism itself can pick that up and carry that along with it and stimulate the immune system. And sometimes they produce what we call mimicry molecules that try and mimic the host antigen. It's a way that the organism can hide and not be seen by the immune system, but sometimes it doesn't work out that way, and they're recognized anyway, and then the immune system will respond against it and eventually respond against the normal cells that would normally be carrying the antigen or a similar antigen. So the autoimmune diseases, which are really increasing in incidence, I think play an important role in those.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Nicholson was talking about this myriad of these chronic infections, and many of them, of course, can take part of the lining of an organism and create something called molecular mimicking, where the person becomes allergic to themselves, molecular mimicking, and then this precipitates the autoimmune diseases, which are so incapacitating and growing in frequency as well. But before we go on, Dr. Nicholson, let's get your website out once again so that people would know where to go to look to get the information that they need on this subject.
The website again for the Institute for Molecular Medicine is www.immed.org. Like immediate.org.
And of course, I think it's important that people understand that there are people who do not want this information out. And what's so interesting is, of course, that Dr. Nicholson's website was hacked recently. Same thing happened to Dr. Merrill Nass, who we've also had on our program. Did anybody else have this similar experience so far?
Well, I sent out an inquiry, and I haven't heard back from Merrill Nass, but I haven't heard back from other people. But I heard indirectly that some of the sites overseas were also hacked, but I don't have any direct information on that.
And of course, there has to be a reason, and I would like to suggest that I believe there really are people who do not want the truth to come out. And I would simply use an analogy. We had a lovely guest. We used to have her very, very frequently here on our program, and she was covering a number of very, very important issues. And, of course, she worked, she has her own business, but she had two children at home. And one day, as they heard this terrible whirring outside their home over in Watsonville, looked out on the porch, went out on the porch, and here is a black helicopter guns, pointing at the house, because if you've ever seen these helicopters from the front, they look like a big bug with all the guns pointing at it. And it's black, it's unmarked, and of course it's down at the level of their kitchen window, kitchen porch. It's illegal for a helicopter to go that low. Well, it hovered there for 4 or 5 minutes and then took off. The boy, of course, was able to identify the type of helicopter. He was a smart, very smart young man, and told his mother. She checked with all the local military facilities. There wasn't any local helicopter. No military helicopters were operating that area, and certainly they wouldn't be operating down at the level of your kitchen window. Of course, they were on a hillside, so the helicopter was probably 20 feet off the ground. But, of course, we did some programs on that, and the helicopters never came back. We do know that our friend, Pat Patriciana, put out a film back in 1994 called The Clinton Chronicles, which was really responsible for the Republican sweep of Congress in 1994. And he had those visits from the helicopters about 10 times down at his home near Slovang in the Central Valley. So they do try to intimidate people, to silence them. And believe me, you have one of these helicopters hovering over your house, and we've had this story from so many people that they've been harassed this way. I don't believe it's just imaginary. I believe it's real. And now, of course, we get the hacking of Dr. Garth Nicholson's website. And Dr. Nicholson is certainly one of the world's leading scientists, and certainly as far as the Gulf War illness and the illnesses that have been inflicted on our service personnel, certainly he's out in the lead. And it's so interesting that it was primarily the information dealing with the certainly our veterans. It was removed from your website, wasn't it, Doctor?
It's primarily that information, our congressional testimony, but things that were really related to chronic infections or military illnesses.
And so why would somebody just take those out? Very selective. They obviously had to know what they were doing. And who would do that unless, of course, there's an effort to cover up the truth from the American people? Well, the information is back up there now?
The information was up within 24 hours, so it didn't cause any lasting damage. And hopefully that will deter, further attacks, because we have the capability of getting the website back up fairly quickly. So it's really a waste of their time to try and do that to us, because we've had this happen before, by the way. This is not the first time. This is just the most recent occurrence and the most extensive occurrence. But we've had the problem before.
All right, fine. And so I fear, unfortunately, that there are people who are well aware of the fact that they do experiment on our military personnel. Anybody who has any question about that, we have a report called the Rockefeller Committee Report. It actually came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994 over the name of Senator Jay Rockefeller. It's a Senate report that points out that hundreds of thousands of American military personnel have been experimented on without their knowledge and consent by the military through the years. Hundreds of thousands. We have the report. They tried to suppress that, but we actually reproduced the report right here on our own printers, because the U.S. printing office would not print enough for the general population. So we have it. It's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. Garth, it seems inconceivable that they would experiment on our service personnel. These young, idealistic young men who go off to risk their lives around the world to fight for what they believe is freedom and democracy. And
it's interesting that our webmaster for our website is one of these military guinea pigs, actually, and he's very dedicated because of this. He was a Marine rifleman whose platoon was volunteered for medical experiments, and most of them died during the experiments. They never did find out exactly what they were given. But he was put in a special unit at Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego, where, again, many of his colleagues died. And he lived, but then he was given a medical discharge from the Marine Corps. And then they tried to deny that he was ever in a hospital. Then they tried to deny he was a Marine. And, of course, this was absurd. He did get his congressman, in fact, to get the Marine Corps to release his medical records, and he did trace back through his medical records, even though a lot of it was in code, because he had been in the military, he managed to get some help and managed to find out exactly the unit that he was in. And it turns out the unit that he was in and the physician in charge was Dr. Michael Kilpatrick. And Michael Kilpatrick in the Defense Department was a Navy captain by the time he retired, and he was in charge of all the Gulf War illness research. If that's like having the rabbits guard the lettuce patch, that's the type of analogy you have to think of. So these are the people that they put in charge, the actual people that were the perpetrators of some of these atrocities are actually been put in charge. It's like having Joseph Mengele not only after World War II, he was, of course, the infamous physician in the death camps, but be given a new job as his head of research, for example, in our military organizations. So it's that comparable to that. It's having people that have conducted military atrocities and war crimes be put in charge of the programs. And so this is something that we've had to put up with for a number of years, these people deep in the Pentagon who are causing a lot of these problems.
And, of course, for those of you who have not read Dr. Garth Nicholson's book, Project A-Lily, that's Project A-Lily. It is really a fictional, fiction, witness fictional, but based upon the facts of his life and, of course, what happened to he and his wife, because they dared to begin to evaluate, of course, what was happening with the Gulf War illness, and of course, they came under tremendous pressure, and their lives were endangered a number of times. And unfortunately, we're not dealing with nice people. We're dealing with people who have a different set of values, I personally believe, because they dream a different dream, and they have no moral conscience. They see nothing wrong with experimenting on human beings as long as they don't get caught. And if they look like they're going to get caught, they're going to do everything they can to conceal the truth from the American people.
Well, Project Daylily was really is an eye-opener to most people that read it. And recently, the Wilkie Company, you know, the producers of the Wikipedia, which is the online encyclopedia, recently named Project Daylily as one of the most significant books of our time. Actually, it was listed with seven other books in the year that it was published in a long list of books produced since 1530. So we're proud to be on that list. People can find that book at Amazon.com or a variety of other places.
Well, we carry the book.
Yes. They can get it from you, which is even better. And I almost forgot about that. They can read about it. It has its own website, ProjectDaylily.com, spelled as one word, ProjectDaylily.com.
And I actually
read the first chapter of the book on that website, too. Yeah.
The book reads like a Tom Clancy novel. The only trouble, Tom Clancy is fiction, and this is really based upon Dr. Nicholson and his wife's experiences as they suddenly came under tremendous attack because, of course, they were trying to get the truth out.
Well, it's a true story, and the only thing that we did change, we changed the names and we changed the institutions and the places, mainly because we didn't want to be tied up for the next decade in frivolous lawsuits. So by doing that, it really circumvented the ability of some of these perpetrators to come out and file a bunch of frivolous lawsuits against us, because we've seen that tactic before. They tried to use that to shut us down a few years ago, and we survived all that. So that's just another another story along the road that we've been down.
Well, you've had a very, very adventurous life, much more adventurous than most university professors. Anyway, a caller just called and said that somebody he knew was a Lyme activist in the United Kingdom had her website hacked after she went to a Gulf War meeting and some time ago tracked back to the Department of Defense rather than help from the police. Why, apparently they gave her a really bad time for daring to report it. So anyway, somebody just called in. If they'd like to come on the air, they could give us a call. We'd be glad to discuss that, but this is the sort of thing that happens.
And the Lyme disease information was some of the information that was removed from the site because, as you know, there's quite a controversy on whether Lyme disease was developed on Plum Island. And, in fact, there's a book about the development of Lyme disease on Plum Island where they were studying insect vectors and mycoplasma and you know, the Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the organism that is a part of Lyme disease, not the only organism in Lyme disease, but it's the principal one, along with some of the others that are present in Lyme disease. It's a complex infectious disease process. So Plum Island seems to be the origin of that. At least they were experimenting on Plum Island. In fact, that's probably how it got loose and ended up in Lyme, Connecticut, which is just a bird's flight away from Plum Island across the Long Island Sound in Connecticut.
And, of course, apparently the caller had said this woman ended up getting sent to a psychiatric ward because she reported, of course, what had happened to the police. Fortunately, that was in England. Nothing like that could happen here, of course. I'm sorry, Garth.
That's one they haven't tried on us, but I think they'd have a hard time making a case that we were psychiatric problems or psychiatric difficulties.
But I've actually seen people sent to psychiatric prisons. You know, weren't crazy at all. This was simply a way of getting them out of the way and discrediting them. After all, when they came up with their story afterwards, they'd say, oh, he's crazy. You know, he was in the psychiatric ward. So they actually do this sort of thing here in the United States. And some of the very, very prominent people have ended up on the psychiatric wards of our major hospitals. One of them
it certainly happened in the military, because some of the patients that have come to us have suffered this fate. Because they had legitimate diseases and illnesses, they tried to get help for that, and they ended up putting them in psych wards instead. And so part of that is a way to shut them up and discredit the fact that they were really sick and had medical problems, not psychiatric problems. So we've seen that before.
And, of course, really the tragedy is that so many of our veterans are ill, and they go to the veterans' hospital and they don't get any help. And then, of course, they come to someone like Dr. Nicholson, and you know, he will help. And are there other doctors out there who are treating these patients?
Yes, there are, but they're too few to handle the problem. And there are people like Dr. Merrill Nass in Maine, who I think has done a terrific job in exposing the problems with the anthrax vaccine and some of the problems that have arisen in the patients that have been hurt by this particular vaccine. So there are very dedicated physicians out there that are trying to help.
And we just need an awful lot more of them. Sometimes the doctors who do try to help, especially with Lyme disease, will come under attack from their medical boards. You know,
we've seen that certainly, and I've got a number of examples with that without going into it, because we'd be talking all night about that. But it's a problem for anybody that works on these emerging illnesses, whether it's Lyme disease or these mycoplasmal illnesses or whatever, is that one of the things that happens is the medical board goes after them and tries to take their licenses away.
And all they're really trying to do is help their patients who have these chronic disabling diseases, and they will respond to long-term antibiotics, won't they, most of them?
Most of them will, and of course it's not just the antibiotics. There are a number of other things that have to be done. Everything from diet to various supplements to increase their immune system, supplements to help repair the damage that's been done to their cells. These are some of the things that we've worked on. Various types of therapies. They can find a lot of information about that on our website, again, under treatment considerations, under www.immed.org.
Now, are you still enthusiastic about the ProPaks that you talked about in the past?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we're trying to get a trial ready to go. This is a trial on mostly special forces that will be deployed to Afghanistan and have to operate at high altitude. And the reason that this is important is that when you operate at high altitude, particularly under strenuous conditions, you put a lot of strain on your whole energy system of your cells. And so this is one thing that helps repair the damage, the normal everyday damage that we have to ourselves and to the little energy batteries inside our cells called the mitochondria. They get damaged, and this happens with aging. It happens with various infections, like the mycoplasma infection does this, or Lyme's disease infection does this. And this is why people end up with chronic fatigue syndrome, essentially, as these infections damage the membranes of the cell and the mitochondria in particular. We've got a supplement that we've researched that can help repair that by bringing in undamaged lipids to repair the lipid membranes and these people regain the function that they'd lost before. And so we've, on our website, in fact, there's a lot of information, some of the clinical trials that we've conducted on this.
And, well, we've been thinking of carrying that. You said that if you think it's good, why would go by your thoughts on it. Apparently, what it does, it specifically targets the mitochondria and helps repair them. And, of course, they're the energy source within our cells, like little tiny batteries there. And apparently they do get damaged in these chronic infections. And this is why so many people will have chronic fatigue. Well, Sydney, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Garth Nicholson to wrap up our program. But our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson, his website, www.immed.org. Go there, get the information. Well, Garth, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, we were discussing the fact that you can repair the damaged membranes and the damaged mitochondria using an all-natural lipid supplement. And that supplement is called NT Factor, and they can find out more information on our website about it. But we've conducted 3 clinical trials on this. They were all highly successful, and different types of trials using different types of patients, or in one case, just simply people that were old, that were just the aging population. As you age, you tend to lose mitochondrial function, and this helps repair it. In fact, my 96-year-old father is on this supplement. He's doing quite well. He has a lot more energy than he had before. I take it myself every day, so I know it works. So that's just one of the things that you can find on our website, www.immed.org, as well as information about these emerging chronic infections that are really causing havoc in our population at the moment, causing all these different fatiguing illnesses, autoimmune illnesses, neurodegenerative diseases, neurobehavioral disorders, particularly in the young people, variety of other different problems as well that we didn't have a chance to go into, causing everything from hormonal problems to, you mentioned, heart disease and other problems. So they're really very important in current day health, and so people need to be informed about this, know how to get tested for it or know how to treat it. And we have that information available on our website.
Well, I think we're very, very fortunate to have that website available. And, of course, people are on chronic antibiotics. It's not simply a matter of taking the antibiotics. There are other things you have to do to protect your intestinal flora and of course, build up your immune system. What about diet? What sort of a diet do you advocate?
Well, the first thing, the most important thing about diet is, of course, to protect the gut. That's you mentioned probiotics, and that's very important. Getting off of sugar, processed sugar, is very important because a lot of these infections depend upon sugars as an energy source. So really getting rid of the sugar is important, increasing the amount of vegetables, and there's a number of other things that people need to do as well. But that's all very important. And the proper diet, of course, if you're not on the proper diet, you're, no matter what kind of treatment you're going to go through, you're probably not going to recover your full health back. Diet is important to maintain your immune system, to maintain your cardiovascular system, and particularly your hormonal system as well. So we know that diet is essential for people to maintain their health.
We're out of time. God bless. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we do hope that you had enjoyed the program with Dr. Nicholson. And, of course, one of the things he stresses is the importance of proper diet, and we suggest you go to his website, or of course, you can get information on that from some of the DVDs we offer, or videos by Dr. Lorraine Day talking about the importance of diet as well. Now, we do carry the so-called Rockefeller Committee report, the one that talks about how they've been experimenting on our servicemen, hundreds of thousands of them, for many years without their knowledge and consent, experimenting and using our servicemen as guinea pigs. And that's why I personally believe so many are ill now, coming back from the Gulf War, first Gulf War, now the second Gulf War. what a wonderful source of guinea pigs these young idealistic men are. If you'd like to get a copy of the Rockefeller Committee report, actually came out of the Veterans Administration. It's a Senate a committee report on the Veterans Administration. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then we carry Dr. Nicholson's book, Project Daylily. We think it's an important book because it's, although it's written as fiction, it's really based upon fact, and we know many of the people who are covered in the book because, of course, we've been at this for a long time. We've interviewed them, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really is an effort to create illness in the American people and to experiment on them. In fact, if you go back and you read the book written by Zbigniew Brzezinski, member of the Trilateral Commission, in my estimation, one of the most evil people in the world today, Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, published in 1970, talks about how in the future we're going to be able to create these chronic illnesses to disable the enemy. Well, you see, you and I, ladies and gentlemen, are the enemy of the elite who are intent upon creating a new world order, a new world religion, a new world leader. And if you look at the original or the updated logo of the Trilateral Commission, you find the updated logo at trilateral.org. And if you look carefully, you'll see that the emblem, the logo, is three sixes made of three arrows. And look at the inside of the arrows. You can see the sixes and then joined together by an upside-down broken cross. The original logo was three sixes intertwined. Why would they come up with something like that unless perhaps they worship a different god and they dream a different dream? Well, certainly the information on so much of this is available through Radio Liberty. If you'd like, of course, to get our talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, or a DVD on the Brotherhood of Darkness, our book on the Brotherhood of Darkness, or if you'd like, of course, to get the talk we have on the forbidden secret that tells of the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance, and or I should say on satanic crimes, and we have a book by that same title. And then, of course, we have a four tape set on the supernatural, and then we have a book that goes with that called The Beautiful Side of Evil. We have a four tape set on Satanism and deliverance. We'll actually hear people, one woman who came from a satanic family, and of course she was they started abusing her when she was 3 years old, and it took years before she really, of course, was able to get things straightened out in her own mind. And fortunately, she found a gentleman. Her psychiatrist sent her to him, a grass farmer up in Oregon, who was able to help her and has been able to help many other people. We have interviews with both of them in our four-tape set, Satanism and Deliverance. We have a book called The Devil Hunter, written by a young man who came out of Satanism, went around the country trying to tell people what was going on, and then sent an FBI agent out afterwards to assure people in the police forces and everybody else that there is no Satanism in America. It's all make-believe. Why would the FBI be doing that? Why would they be lying to the American people? Please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.